face going, damn, goddamn ID, some promos.
What is it going to take? We got him?
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring him on. Sooner or later, if we talk to Max enough, we'll actually have, he'll have his own intro on the show and everything. You know, but Max, can you hear us okay?
I certainly can. Thanks for asking me on again.
Oh, I had a great time. I love talking to you. I know we're a different time slot now. We do 2 to 6 Eastern here in America, but what time is it where you're at right now?
20 past 6 in the morning, brother.
You are early. Are you rising early just for us?
Look, sometimes I get up early. I won't say it's just for you, you know?
Well, you know, we were trying to do the math, and I was like, well, wait a minute. It's Wednesday here. It's Thursday morning in Australia. Where on the big continent are you? Whereabouts in Australia?
I'm on the east coast of Australia, just near Byron Bay. The most easterly point, you know?
So you're basically right there. You're staring into the Pacific Ocean.
Pretty well, yeah. Actually, I think it's the Coral Sea, but yeah, pretty well.
that's me flunking geography right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Max, remind me, how old are you? I know you're not quite as old as me, or where are you in that?
I'm 55.
Okay, so he's got like 3 years on me. I'm 52.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought you guys were right around the same age.
Yeah, and the last time we had Max on the show, we really had a chance to get to know him a little and find out what made him decide to do what he does, podcasting, broadcasting, documentaries. He's really a part of what I would call the new thought movement. I don't want to, you know me, Frank, I don't like to label anything. Because the moment you label it, you kind of limit yourself, and then everybody
you
else
get put in a box.
Yeah, but they heave their crap on you because now they can identify you.
Yeah.
You know, they can say, you're this or you're that. And when I talk to you, Max, you know, so many, we talked everything from sacred geometry to expanding consciousness, but we also talked to politics. We talked to controlled media. So we kind of went that whole gamut. And since we kind of know you a little, our daytime listeners may not be familiar with you. Give me a quick, I don't know, a couple of minutes on how you came about to do what you do now.
Well, I mean, it had always been a hobby of mine, research. I've been a musician most of my life, or a front of house engineer, something in music, and research had always been a hobby of mine. And it was just something that I enjoyed. And when 9/11 happened, as with so many people, it became necessary. I thought, well, this is more than a hobby. This is actually quite serious, and I need to start spreading this information to people. So it just became a matter of course, I think. I mean, I think a lot of people did that when 9/11 happened. A lot of people who were researchers suddenly realized how serious this was and began to speak out. So that, I'm just one of those, I guess.
It's amazing what that day was when we look at it. It's a turnkey. It was basically the get up and go for the project for the new American century and the expanded military presence in the Middle East. It was written on paper, but they needed their boogeyman, if you will. But it's also it's an awakening. It's a red pill moment, as we refer to it, for a lot of people. It is also, once you go down that road, you are forever changed. So it's not just an event where people died. It is a life-changing event for so many people on so many different levels, isn't it, Max?
Look, it is. In many ways, it was a gift to consciousness in many ways, because it caused this huge awakening to happen. And, I mean, it's so obvious that it was staged, but you've got to wonder what they would thinking because of the effect it's had on people. It's almost done the opposite of what they wanted it to do in many ways, because it was such a pivotal event, and it's so obvious, and it has caused a huge awakening on the planet.
Well, you look at a couple of days after 9/11 and 94% approval rating of a president, and so many people feeling united and together, and in the country, the world reached out to us. There was a moment to turn, as Glenn Beck likes to say, the next day, if we had gone in a different direction, the 9/12, that it could have been a massive consciousness awakening, but it seemed that it ended up being one that is happening at its own pace. You know, 2004 was my red pill. A couple other people that I kind of pissed off by talking about it too much to them, they kind of distanced themselves from me. And then about 2008, 2009, they reached out to me and started asking me the questions. So it took them a couple years of cognitive dissonance to get through that. And now it's almost like I think we're reaching critical mass. What do you think?
Oh, we are. Absolutely. And the more negative they make it, the more people wake up. That's the thing. I mean, I see all of these problems as opportunities. And this is the first opportunity we've really had in history for a real awakening and a real chance at some positive change, because the mechanisms of the machine has been laid so bare now, and we're almost spiritually evolved enough to actually deal with it, to actually deal with freedom. So yeah, there is a critical mass happening, and it's exponential. It's happening everywhere. People that you wouldn't even expect to be awake are waking up now, because things are getting just so in your face in every direction that you can't help but wake up to it.
Well, we had 7/7. We've had Oklahoma City way before 9/11, and now we've had the Boston bombing, and you and I have not spoken since then, so I'm sure you have your take, and I don't want to put any words in your mouth, and this is the first time we've really spoken since this, so, you know, false flag is being Googled through the roof, and people are, like you said, waking up, but Max Egan, our guest right now in Dangerous Conversation. Max, why don't you give me your overall synopsis of the Boston bombing?
Well, the Boston bombing was very predictable, especially after Sandy Hook. Actually, when Sandy Hook happened, I said, you're going to see more of these attacks, and they're going to be used to vilify the truth movement. And you just got to look at the way these things are played. I mean, whether it was a staged event or not, it's how it was played. And people ask me, look, was it a staged event? And I say, look, I've got to admit that I'm biased. I just think it's all staged.
Yeah.
They've done it so many times that, I mean, I look at it from a biased perspective. I've got to admit that that's true. So what I look at now is how it was played. And the Boston bombing was really, more than anything, a media event. It was really played to the hilt. And so that suggests that it's a staged event, and there's an agenda behind it, and it's going to be used to fulfill a certain agenda. And that's exactly what it's done. And I think we'll see more of them. I think they're all going to start pointing towards the truth movement, all going to be truthers, because the government wants to portray truthers as domestic terrorists, domestic enemy, you know. The government knows who its enemies are, who's speaking out against it, and it's people like you and me. So we're going to be vilified by these attacks in the future.
That's okay. We wear that kind of stuff with a badge of courage around here, brother.
And I really like how he kind of framed his answer initially, too, because I think that's the way a lot of us approach it now. Like, I know me personally, I think just about everything's fucking staged at this point.
You know what? So, I suspect it going in. That's what I do. Soon as I get to six to a dozen anomalies or three or four different official stories...
Yeah.
It all kind of unravels.
Because
unravels.
Like Max pointed out, we go into it with the understanding that we're already biased in that direction. So like he said, we try to see how it plays out after the fact. And then you can, after you see the entire picture and not just each individual moving part, you can see how it's this orchestra this symphony of the things that
problem reaction solution.
It leads them to their ultimate goal.
Max, go ahead, Max, go ahead.
No, it's absolutely, they do that, and it's how it's played. I mean, a really good example was the fertilizer explosion a couple of days later after
West
the Boston
Texas.
Bombing, which killed far more people. It was far more of a devastating event, but the media kind of didn't hardly touch it. It was like page three within one day or two days. And yet we've got these three people killed by pressure cookers by, you know, down-home white boys with baseball caps on backwards, and this is played to the hilt. So you can just see by how the media plays it whether there is an agenda there, and if there is an agenda there, then obviously it's been staged for a specific reason.
I'm not sure how have you seen the photo essays of most of the photos with the Kraft International security guards at the finish line, Max? Have you seen those?
Yeah, I've seen those.
Ironically, three of those were also the same three Sandy Hook police officers, or Connecticut State, or Newtown State. I'm not sure if they were local Newtown cops or Connecticut State troopers who were actually working for Kraft International, ironically, and wearing backpacks, and also, yes, at the finish line. So it's a small world after all, isn't it, Max?
It is a small world after all, and that's something else that I said with the Sandy Hook thing, is that you're going to see people that are playing these events, and like, I won't say actors as in Hollywood actors, but people that are acting out roles in these certain events. But if you start calling actors after Sandy Hook, they vilified that whole concept of anyone using actors. You know what I mean? Because Sandy Hook was played to the hilt to absolutely vilify the truth movement and anyone that would suggest that any of these things are staged. So now they can do it with impunity and get away with it, you know?
Max Egan is our guest on Dangerous Conversation. The photo I mentioned is actually it's a meme. It shows the three cops, literally, ironically, in both photos, Frank.
Yeah,
they're in the same order, kind of like the Three Stooges always line up in the same order. You know, you have Curly,
you think
Larry,
it's like
and Mo.
Subliminal, like they,
I don't know,
they
dude.
Just do that
no,
without
the,
even
the
knowing
second
it.
Photo is them in their security, and they're running down the street, but they happen to be running in the same order that they were sitting for the interview that they did. You know, walking into the classroom and talking about the horrific things they saw and everything else. Those are the same three people, the same three guys.
That makes you wonder how many different times these same three people were paraded out together as a group.
Well, again, you know, it's almost like if you're a CIA guy, probably some type of intel guy, you know, and you're doing these things, you know, you have assignments. Now, someone's going to argue that, Max, that, hey, Connecticut and Boston, I used to live up there, by the way. That's a 90-minute ride. You can also work for Kraft International Private Security at the Boston Marathon. You know, it's not such a bad argument that, you know, you're a cop, you're a security guy. You know, down here we have cops as bouncers and bars making extra money. So what's wrong? You know, if I play devil's advocate for a second, Max, someone looks at that photo and goes, what's the big idea? These guys are making extra money on the weekends at the Boston Marathon, and they have to wear a different uniform than they normally wear.
Well, yeah, the thing is, like I said, how is the event played? These were two huge media events, and you've got the same cast at each presentation, basically. It's just sus. It's just sus. You've got to say, yeah, well, it's possible that they could be doing that, but what's the chances of these same three people working at such a large media event?
Yes. And also, like Max said, you know, look how it's played. Like, if that was the case, wouldn't it stand to reason that these three people would come out and say, hey, they'd say exactly what you just said. Hey, I live 90 minutes away. This is a great opportunity to make some extra money. It's something I do on a regular basis, is work security.
It's a different uniform.
My own time.
What's the big deal? I'm wearing a different uniform.
Wouldn't they openly come just to disprove that and discount that whole theory?
Well, I would say when you get into statistical anomalies and you go, what are the odds that the first three cops to run into the Sandy Hook building are also three security guys that were also at the Boston bombing, literally feet away from the bomb? Now, you start saying, okay, you know, proximity of location, they're security people to begin with. The odds aren't huge. And it's an argument you have to acknowledge. You have to say that's not exactly a big reach.
And if you are one of those three people, you have to assume that argument's going to come up and you should address it openly, which, to my knowledge, that hasn't been done.
Yeah, and Max Egan, if they show up and if we find them at the next one, then we realize they have a limited budget.
Well, that's pretty well it. Yeah, absolutely. If they show up at the next one, I mean, I don't know. It'll go from the sublime to the ridiculous.
You know? Yes. You know, the idea that Alex Jones has a small stringer of reporters in the I'm not saying I like the way Dan Bondi, you know, goes into a press conference and starts yelling, is this false flag to take away our freedoms? I mean, it's still, he put it in question form. But when was the last time we saw not one, two separate press conferences being called by the big time officials of a big time city right after a big time bombing? Two different times, Max, this guy rolls in, one by asking two difficult questions, and next time he's holding the same photos we're talking about of all the Kraft International guys squatting in the hall. Have you seen the one, Frank, where he's sitting in the door, the doorway of one of the buildings?
Uh-uh.
He's squatting down, leaning. He's laying the backpack down next to him. This guy shows up with a bunch of photos, stands there in front of all these cops that are about to make, and goes, who's this guy? Who's this guy? And all of a sudden, he clears the room. Twice now, Max, we have seen one person. And the reason I'm bringing it up is it shows the power of one person being able to stand in that room and say, wait a minute, I disagree, and you're not getting away until you answer my question. Max, have you seen those press conferences?
No, I haven't, actually, but it sounds good. I'd like to have a look.
His name is Dan Bondi. I believe it's B-O-N-D-I. He did take some abuse from some Boston.
Oh, it is the same guy.
It's the same guy. Okay. Yeah, it's basically he's a stringer for Alex Jones, and he lives in the Boston area. And he was in there being brand new to media and asking questions. He was a little nervous and bold at the same time. And the media literally left the room both times, Max. Right after.
That shows how easy you can clear a room with the truth, then, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's an amazing example. And by the way, he got tore up later on. He was handing.
Yeah, that guy was an asshole.
Yeah, but guess what? A follow-up to the story, Max. He's standing a couple of days later, you know. But let's face it, he's kind of a, you know, he's a big roly-poly looking guy.
He looks
like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Easy target.
He's an easy target, especially in the city of Boston where people are, I believe me, I know.
They're harpoons, they don't fuck like you in that city, they're going to let you know.
They're like New Yorkers.
They got 101 ways.
They will drop F-bombs 9,000 different ways. And this guy gets abused for 4 minutes, Max, by this guy. Guess what? Turns out this guy's done videos for MSNBC. And he was, I'm not going to say hired, but he was...
The guy who was shredding him?
Yes.
Oh, what an asshole.
Yes. He actually has done some videos for MSNBC. So even the guy who you think is just videoing you with your phone and, I wonder what that agenda. See, Max is like me. I don't necessarily trust anything anymore. So I go to, and this is what Holland van den Nieuwenhof.
Nailed it.
I nailed that name. The man partially responsible for the movie called A Noble Lie, which is about Oklahoma City, he said the same thing. What is the playbook? Watch the script they follow right after this event, and watch how quickly, Max Egan, that they go to the same script on different channels. It's amazing to watch, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, and that's how you can tell. That's really how you can tell, and that's what I look for now is how it's being played. Is it a media event or is it not? And what is the aftermath? And, you know, the Boston bombing was a beautiful example, was textbook example, really, of how they play this stuff. For what was such a small event. And the fact that they used pressure cookers, down-home guys, I mean, you know, you could see this coming a mile away.
One of the sad things is, I don't want to say sad because I don't live in that city and I don't, let fear rule my world, but for those that did, they had no issues whatsoever of military-style vehicles and cops fully strapped in armor, if you will, you know, literally looking like military rather than police, going up and down the streets and trying to find their fugitives. And most of the Bostonians did not complain. And think of the city, Max. It's a liberal city to begin with. It's where Lexington and Concord took place. By the way, the bombing took place on the anniversary. That's what Patriots Day is in Boston. It's the celebration of Lexington and Concord.
One of the first battles
with us going against the British.
Huh.
So symbolistic. It's so goddamn obvious. It's like over the top, isn't it, Max?
Absolutely. And the way they locked the town down. I mean, everyone just let it happen. They just locked the whole city down. They started going door to door. It was full on. It was like virtually martial law in Boston in America. And it was a trial run, absolutely. See what they can get away with. See how far they can push it for such a small event, really. And like I say, it really was a small event. I mean, it's terrible that anybody died, but it was, on the scale of things, it was a small event. You know, pressure cooker bombs, small explosions, only three people killed. It was a small event, and it was played to the hilt, absolutely, and used to lock down an entire city. So it was a trial run.
Max, you have talked, you kind of talked about Sandy Hook, and you said after Sandy Hook that America would be seeing, Alex Jones uses the word soft kill. I think it's a little ingenuous to use that. When one person dies, there's nothing soft about it. But you're talking about smaller, not another 9/11, but America's probably looking at more smaller events.
Oh, yeah, more smaller events. Events that can be seen to be done by just normal people using normal household appliances is what you're going to see, which is what we saw at this, you know, pressure cookers, ball bearings. Now, it was one store that actually took pressure cookers off the shelves in the wake of the Boston bombing. So, yeah, you're going to see more of this. They want to make it look like, you know, anybody could be a terrorist. The guy next door, anybody who questions the government may just go uptown with a pressure cooker and start blowing people up. That's what they want to do. They really want to have people looking over their shoulder and checking out their neighbors and bring as much division into the community as possible.
It's 6 a.m. right now in Australia, Frank, and Max Egan is so cool because he loves being on Dangerous Conversation that he set his alarm early.
Yeah.
And he is hanging out with us.
And he's still more awake than most of the people over here.
Yeah, he's doing a hell of a job. He's probably got a little caffeine in him. Max, what was the first documentary you made?
The first documentary I made was called The Big Picture. And I just sort of did it because I've discovered YouTube. I thought, hey, I can do this. So I started putting together a slideshow, and it actually turned into a documentary film. And yeah, that was the first one that I made, The Big Picture.
Give us some bet.
2008.
Give us the batting order. When did you do The Awakening?
The Awakening I did about 2010, I think. I did The Big Picture, then I did one after it called New World Order, The Final Solution, which was a short 25-minute film. And at the end of that, I suggested that non-compliance was actually what we need to do. We just need to stop complying with this system. So then I put out another short one called Fight the New World Order with Global Non-Compliance. And that went really big. That a lot of people watched that. And from there, I started to make The Awakening and got sort of interrupted in that and ended up condensing all of the three films I'd made into a one-hour production called The Calling, which was designed to try to reach the New Ages. I put a bit of a New Age ending on it to try to crack the shell with these people because, unfortunately, most of them are very asleep. They've got good intentions, but they're just not applying themselves to the world. So I made The Calling to try to reach those people. I mean, I'm living in Byron Bay, so I'm surrounded by them. And they're finding it all too negative with what I put in the big
picture. What do they think? Wearing a bunch of crystals is going to fix shit?
Yeah, that's the problem, you know. They believe if they ignore all the bad stuff, it'll go away. And I've been saying, well, it's not working if you have a look at
the... No, there's... You're living a duality. You're a permanent consciousness, call it your soul, and you're a body in a physical realm coexisting at the same time. And the reason you're coexisting is because the body needs to do some shit from time to time to fix something. You need to get involved. You know,
yeah,
I
get
believe
involved.
In prayer.
Participate, yeah.
Yes, believe me, I am a firm believer. I am a consciousness in a temporary realm. I don't even want to say believe it. There's something inside me. I did a lot of my own reading and my own research, and 10 years later, I'll call it a switch went off inside of me, Max, and it became a truth. And, you know.
It is. That's what's going on. It's good to know that. And if you change your perspective and understand how reality really works, it has a huge effect on your life. But unfortunately, they get locked into this little bubble of spiritual narcissism through the gurus that they follow, and that's what it does. So that's why I made The Calling, to try to reach these people. And I made Transformation just recently.
Oh, wait a minute.
I've done six films all up, yeah.
He's got Frank, doesn't he have the perfect narrator voice?
He's got some great pipes.
He's got great pipes. Yeah. I mean, he's got the Aussie accent. He's awakened
that
guy.
That cool Australian accent. Not cheesy like Crocodile Dundee, but like, I don't know, like cool. Like you'd see him on a ranch or something.
I could just picture myself. Max, I can't remember if you said, because we're pro-hemp and pro-weed here, and at least hopefully our country will catch up, but I'm not sure if you are or if you're not when it comes to cannabis.
Well, I gave a pretty scathing speech at the World Hemp Congress last year in Slovenia. I'm very pro-cannabis. I think it would save the world. I think that the reason cannabis is illegal is through because
money.
Of political expediency and money. I mean, some of the most pollutive and most profitable businesses on the planet would be out of business were cannabis not illegal. I think it's a huge problem, and we need to address it. Yeah, absolutely.
So, see, that's what I'm saying, Frank, is when you find like-minded people, you want to hang around, you want to smoke, you want to open that third eye wisdom up, and he's the kind of guy that would just sit around a table with you, shoot the shit with you, and be cool, but he wouldn't judge you, you know, he'd kind of see where you're at, and it's, unfortunately, he lives in Australia.
Yeah, that sucks. We'd have to, like, have a beer over Skype or something.
That's what we need to do. We'll tip a beer here and you'll tip one there. We'll do something cool that way.
Yeah, it'd be very difficult to hang around over Skype, unfortunately, but we can pretend.
Max, last one of the short videos I saw, I think you and a buddy of yours were on a roof and you were cutting back and forth from evidence to mini rants. What was that video called? What was that about?
It was a couple that we did. There was one called Max Egan and Ken O'Keefe Freestyle Gaza Rooftop, and there was another one called False Flags in the American Interest, where we broke down
that
conversation by Patrick Clawson, who's a Jewish lobbyist, who was trying to put forth the concept that we need to go and bomb Iran, that it's in America's best interest to go to war with Iran. So we broke that down. We saw this presentation by this guy, and we just couldn't believe how blatant it was. Basically going on to TV saying we're going to stage false flags, folks. We need to kickstart this with Iran, you know. And Ken and I couldn't believe it. We were in Gaza at the time, and the Rachel Corey trial had just happened, the trial of the bulldozer driver who murdered Rachel Corey. He'd just gone to trial and been exonerated. And so we were a little bit concerned about that. And we saw this and we just thought, this is ridiculous. We have to do something on this, this talk. So we did. We put that out and it was very well received. Actually, it was, very soon after it, there was a report put out by RT where they parodied the very same clip in the very same manner in which we did. I would suggest that they got the idea from us, actually.
Oh, they're ripping, Abby Martin's ripping you off, huh?
Well, it looked like it. It looked like it. The approach that they have, they were going, you know, look, it was just sarcastic and just the whole approach that they had. She'd obviously seen the clip that Ken and I had done.
I know the one you're talking about. I've played it. I'm trying to find it, but I can't. He literally starts the speech with conflict. He calls it conflict resolution or a conflict initiation. Yeah, yeah. Conflict initiation is difficult. Isn't that how it starts?
Yeah. Conflict initiation is really tough.
It can be.
Crisis initiation is
that's
really
what
tough.
It was. Crisis initiation. Then he goes all the way back to the main. He basically takes through the U.S.'s history of false flags. He literally goes down each one.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Oh, yeah. He goes down all
exactly.
of them.
Exactly. The only one he doesn't mention is 9/11.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, ironically.
Because every event that he mentions is a false flag. It's just so blatant now. And not only is it blatant, they're filming it. They're putting it out there saying, hey, guys, we're going to do this, and you're not even going to notice. And the thing is that the people didn't notice. That's the scary part, that they can actually do this, put it on TV, and people just don't see it. It's incredible.
It'll end up on C-SPAN for a couple hours in this country, and then it'll disappear into the archives. Max, you mentioned transformation. Now, did I talk to you after that came out? I don't remember that in the conversation.
I think it was after that came out. That came out about April last year, transformation. So, yeah, it would have been after it came out. That was more about transhumanism and where they're attempting to take us.
In other words, cyborgs and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, what they're sort of merging us with machine, and they're genetically modifying the entire planet. I mean, they really are. Even in Europe now, they're talking about banning all heritage seeds that aren't GM. So you know, you've got to really look at what's going on here. The whole Earth has been genetically modified. It's being done in a very, very haphazard way. It's like this huge experiment is going on, and we need to pay attention to it. That's basically what the film was about.
Let me ask you, we're here in the Tampa Bay area on the left coast of Florida, you know, right near the Gulf of Mexico. We get a lot of fronts come from different areas, and a lot of times we'll see the geoengineering or the chemtrails, if you will. Where, do you experience any of that where you're at, and is there geoengineering in Australia?
Yes, there is. Yeah, there is. There's geoengineering and chemtrails in all first world countries. And that's another thing, folks. If you're saying that these things are only contrails, how come they are only over first world countries?
Yes.
I've been right around the world. And
we got the good air.
They're not in South America. They're not in any third world countries. There's none in Israel, none in Palestine, but they're all through Europe, all through England, all through Ireland, through America, through Australia, all first world countries. They're not everywhere else, just those countries.
Well, you mentioned genetically modifying things. I mean, with the amount of barium and aluminum, they're going to taint the soil. They got the GMO seeds that are aluminum resistant. The idea that you can ban a seed—I mean, wait, pot's a naturally occurring substance, and it's elite. You're basically saying God fucked up. God made a mistake. He made this plant called cannabis, and you're not allowed to use it. So God made a mistake, and we know more about.
You're not supposed to have this.
Yeah, and you know. Oh, by the way, that tomato. We're going to make sure none of the new ones have any seeds because we don't want you growing your own tomato plants because we don't think you're responsible enough to put a seed in the dirt and put some water on it. You know, because that's our job. But you know.
Well,
yeah, go ahead,
it's all breach of trust, brother. That's the thing. You know, we look at all this and we think, how can we deal with this? We start petitioning governments and we start trying to act within the parameters that they provide for us. We've got to step back from it and realize that it's all breach of trust. Everything they're doing is breach of trust.
Yeah.
And we need to have a united community. We need to start respecting each other so we can stand up as a united community and hold our public trustees accountable for their actions, because that's what government is. They are public trustees. They are nothing more. But we've forgotten who we are. We've forgotten what our role is. And we keep trying to work within the parameters that they provide for us to address these problems. But the legal parameters that they give us, it's not to protect us. It's not to provide a viable legal system. It's to protect their criminality.
Oh, yeah.
So we need to step above it and realize what we're swimming in here.
Yeah, that's a pretty damn good system. They've been working on it for quite a while. You know, you go from Occupy to the Tea Party. Libertarian Party's rearing its head right now. The idea that every time you throw a party, and if unless you invite everybody, you're not going to get the change you want. Stop worrying about your goddamn affiliations and start worrying about reaching out. You're a human being. I'm a human being. Let's start. We call it 80-20 here on our show, Max. 80% of your life and my life are identical from our first step to our last breath. The other 20, you know, a little heritage, a little, you know, you got some DNA. You may look a little different. You may act a little different. You may like different foods, but you're not any more different than me. We call it the 80-20 rule.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. But, you know, that's how we got to deal with it. We got to realize who and what we are. You know, it's a psychopathic system. It's provided psychopathic parameters for us. We're given this psychopathic reality and we're told to make it work. And it doesn't work, and it's never going to work until we address the situation. But we've got to know who we are before we can do it. We've got to stop acting within their parameters. We've got to realize that we are all in this together. Yeah, 80-20 sounds great. We are all in this together, and we have the ability to fix the problems as soon as we realize and remember who and what we are.
Final solution, the awakening, the big picture, the calling, transformation. This guy's, what do you got, your own video studio? Where do you do all this stuff?
Well, I just do it here on my computer. It takes many hours, but yeah, I just do it, most of it by myself. I get the odd people to do a bit of animation for me, but most of it's just a one-man show.
Are you like a nature guy? Do you love being out in nature?
Oh, absolutely. Every week I go out and do walks these weeks. I went out and did a 5-kilometer walk yesterday, did 8 kilometers the week before. And so I go to the forest a lot, out through waterfalls, and I like big trees and waterfalls. It's great, and there's a lot of that around here where I live.
You a water guy with all that water around you? Do you like the ocean or do you avoid it?
Oh, I don't mind the ocean, but it's kind of strange for an Australian. I'm not really that into the ocean. I mean, it's there. I don't mind it, but I much prefer the forests and rock pools and creeks and streams. And we've got a beautiful, beautiful hinterland where I am. So I spend most of my time out there, actually, in the country. I prefer the country than the ocean. I mean, there's a lot of terrorists in the ocean, a lot of people, a lot of sharks.
A lot of sharks where you're at, no? Sharks.
Well, it's Australia. It's Australia, mate. We don't mess around. You know?
We're in the Gulf of Mexico. Our sharks are 3 feet, 4 feet long. You're Australia. You got 15 footers.
Yeah, we got the big ones here, mate. We got so much stuff in this country that wants to kill you. You got to wonder why we're here. But it's great. I love it.
Well, it started off as a debtor's prison, I believe, when the King of England got tired of it. The prisons got overcrowded, and they went, well, there's this giant thing down there in South Pacific. Why don't we just shenzi down there, and what, 200-300 years later, it's its own country.
It does seem like a really beautiful place, you know, anytime I see pictures or anything.
Bucket list. Australia would be on the bucket list to definitely.
Places to travel overseas.
Oh, my God, I would love that. Hey, Max, I want to throw you a little heads up. I just heard from some cool people, and it might be something you'd be interested in knowing about. It's called, well, they might rebrand it, but let me get the website so I can recommend it to you. JAG TV. JAGTV.com, okay?
Okay, I'll check that.
Yeah, Google it and find out about it. They're trying to form a libertarian television network.
Okay.
Not that you have to be libertarian, but you'd be the, you know, you got the content, you got the accent, he's got the, you know, that kind of good spiritual humanistic balance going on.
He's very eloquent. I mean, he's, you know, he makes a lot of great points, and he's very well-spoken.
And he likes weed.
Yeah, that's a bonus.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, it says at the beginning of JAG TV, it says a gateway drug to freedom. That's what it says at the top of their TV. See, this is the TV station I want to work for.
I like that slug line.
I bet they'd have no drug testing. I'm just saying.
One would have to assume.
Max, I'm going to let you go. It's been a pleasure. You know, I appreciate you. Normally, be honest now, did you get up early for this interview or are you normally up this early?
No, I was actually up. I was already up. I get up pretty early. So, you know, I did actually set my alarm so that I would get up for it, but I didn't need the alarm. I was already awake. So.
All right. Let's get websites, Twitter. I know you're not real big. Are you big on Twitter? I don't see you tweet that much.
No, I don't tweet anything. I'm not on Twitter. Someone actually opened a Twitter account for me and they run it, I think. I don't know. If you look on Twitter, you'll find Max Egan, but it's not me. It's someone acting on my behalf.
Facebook, how can people find you, find your podcast, your broadcast, website? Give us all that stuff.
They can go to my website, which is thecrowhouse.com, and you'll find links to my Facebook pages there. You'll find links to my YouTube channel. It's all there on thecrowhouse.com. Everything that I do gets posted on that site.
Well, I'll tell you what, and by the way, do you ever make it to the U.S. or no?
I try to avoid it. it's kind of like jumping into the lion's den at the moment, and I've got all that TSA stuff to deal with. I mean, I'm out traveling a little bit. I've got to go back to Gaza probably in July, and you never know. I've been asked to go to the States a lot, but I kind of try to avoid it. But you never know. I might get there if they'll let me in.
And any new videos, even like, let's say, a short form, 20 minutes or more, anything new in the works, or right now you're not doing any of that?
No, I haven't been doing any of that. I've got too much stuff on at the moment, but I do plan on making another film soon. But with what's going on with the Gaza trip and the South American trip, I've got this project called Full Circle I'm trying to put together. So that's taking up a lot of my time at the moment.
Anybody else you want to recommend? Because we always like to kind of grow the tree here. When we have a band on, we find out if they know any other bands, and we kind of grow our contributors. Is there anybody that you think might be enjoying maybe being on our show here that you could recommend we can contact?
I can think about it.
Drop us an email or something.
I can do that. Someone that I've actually been quite interested in their work lately is John Lash. I'm very interested in his interpretation of the Gnostic teachings and the Gnostic texts. I think he did a great job with that, so I plan on having him on the show if I can get hold of him soon. But that's someone whose research I have a great deal of respect for, so I'd suggest look at him, you know.
All right, now we're going to get you to cut a promo for us before we let you go, okay?
Okay, I think we did that last time.
Oh, we did? Well, this time we're going to have to actually...
You got a new time slot now.
This time, that's right. We are in afternoons now. That's true.
Okay. What would you like to say?
Dangerous Conversation is the name of the show, as you know. Radio I-O, R-A-D-I-O, and then I-O is .com. And then my name is Scott Ledger, and the rest is up to you.
Okay, my name is Scott Ledger. Your name is Scott Ledger.
You can just give me the, hi, this is Max Egan. You're listening to Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger on RadioIO.com, something like that.
Okay, my name is Maxwell Egan. You are listening to Dangerous Conversations on RadioIO with Scott Ledger.
Not bad. He should do voiceover, man. He'd make a ton of money.
Yeah, it sounds good.
He would make a ton of money. Absolutely.
And he sounds better than the craft guy.
I'm telling you, look into this JAG TV. You know, I'm sure they're going to be looking for content providers, and it might be something right up your alley.
I'll definitely look into it. Thank you, brother.
And thank you. One of these days, if we ever cross the pond, the drinks are on me.
Absolutely. Same here. Come over. Come for a visit.
Oh, it's on my bucket list. Believe me, if I had a chance to go to Australia, I would definitely do it. So, if you never know. I'm not sure what's in the works for my life right now, but... I just want to get to Colorado and smoke weed. Never mind Australia. You know, I just want to go somewhere where people are freer than where I am now. That's it. Max, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk to you again. Absolutely.